From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made yesterday when registrations for COVID-19 vaccines opened up at a FEMA site in Rochester. The site, located at the former Kodak Hawkeye parking lot on St. Paul Street, will start providing vaccines next Wednesday, and in the first week, it will be open only to City of Rochester residents in specific zip codes, those that are historically underserved. That's the intention here. Now, according to a report by ACT Rochester and the Community Foundation, local African Americans have been infected with COVID-19 at four times the rate of white people, and they've experienced more than twice as many deaths from the virus. The report shows the infection and hospitalization rates for Latinos were more than double than that of white residents. On Tuesday, Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren called for more to be done to help black and brown communities access the vaccine. In a press conference, she said that many of Rochester's most populated zip codes are two to three times behind the suburbs, like Webster, Pittsford, Brighton. The FEMA site will be able to administer, well, they said about 1,000 doses a day, and they want to be aggressive. Mayor Warren is calling for a two-week extension to dedicated access for underserved communities before they open it up. This hour, we're joined by state leaders to talk about the urgency of getting more people vaccinated in Rochester and making sure that those inequities are addressed. We'll also discuss issues of equity when it comes to vaccine access to begin with, internet access, how to get signed up, and more. Later this hour, our guests will share their perspectives on a grand jury decision regarding the Daniel Prude case, and we'll talk about other state business. I'd like to welcome our guests now. Damon Meeks is a member of the New York State Assembly. Damon, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Evan.
And a member of the New York State Senate, Jeremy Cooney. Senator Cooney, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back, Evan.
And also welcome to Yvette Conyers, who is a doctor of nursing practice, a family nurse practitioner, and an assistant professor of nursing, talking about access in our community. Dr. Conyers, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Senator Cooney, let me start with you. When you see what's happening in Rochester and this push to get underserved communities more access to the vaccine, how long should we be doing this? I mean, are you satisfied with what's going on, or you want changes?
Well, listen, I'm not satisfied until most of our neighbors have the same opportunities as all of us to make sure that they have access to this vaccine. None of us want to be in a situation where this virus continues to hold us back and threaten our lives and our loved ones for the foreseeable future. So we want to make sure that everyone has the same opportunity to get their vaccination shot and feel confident in the process. And so I'm really grateful that we do have this new FEMA-based site at the old Hawkeye plant, and I'm certainly encouraging everyone to take advantage of this opportunity. I'm talking to some residents this morning, and I was saying, think of this as a VIP, you know, opportunity. You get to cut the line because you've been missing out for so long. And now we have a site that's located in a city neighborhood that you can walk to, that you can access by public transportation, and a dedicated time frame to access these critical appointments. So please don't miss your opportunity to take advantage of this program. And so that's why we're here, is we care deeply. We want to make sure everyone has the same opportunities so that we're in a better place in a few months.
How do you think the first 24 hours have gone once they opened up appointment access? What's your first take on what we're seeing so far?
Well, I'm very encouraged. I've seen some different numbers floated out there. I know that the city of Rochester is saying that they've helped secure over 6,000 city residents to sign up for a vaccine appointment. I don't know if it's all within that first week or if it's over the next few weeks. But, hey, every bit is progress. Every person who learns about this opportunity and then is able to actually get an appointment is progress. I'm also really encouraged by seeing everyone coming together and working to ensure that people have information. My office is making calls to thousands of residents in these zip codes. We're doing everything from robocalls to social media posts. But I know that my rest of my friends in the state delegation are doing the same thing. I know the governor's team is doing their part, City Hall and the operators at 311. All of our library staff are helping people sign up. We have an RIT chapter, a fraternity chapter of Lambda Alpha Upsilon, who volunteered service hours, right, to make calls to residents. So we're all coming together so that people know that this is an opportunity to take advantage of a life-saving opportunity.
Assemblyman Meeks, when it comes to what you're seeing at this site so far, are you satisfied with the rollout so far, and do you want to see changes to how long the access will be there?
I think it's definitely a step in the right direction as far as reaching out, but we also have to realize like what the barriers are. And in some instances, it may possibly take a door-to-door campaign at some point in meeting people where they are. We have a number of assisted living centers where people are dealing with a number of different disabilities. So they don't have the ability to just get out there and make it to these sites. So I think we have to be conscious about meeting people where they are and making sure that they're getting the services that they need.
When it comes to sort of the question on which communities not only have access, Assemblyman Meeks, but also where the resistance is, I want to explore this a little bit with you. And in fact, all three of you, I'm sure, will have a lot to say about this. But, the first few hours yesterday, Assemblyman Meeks, there were questions on, oh, boy, there's a lot of appointments untaken so far. And, maybe people aren't calling. Maybe people aren't getting online. Maybe people aren't signing up. That started to change throughout the day, but to me that speaks to the complexity of reaching communities that have historically been underserved. Not everyone is online. Not everyone is as plugged in. Not everyone is aware of opportunity. How do you see the challenge, and maybe, how do you see the question of who is signing up quickly or more slowly and what it's telling us?
I think what it's telling us is we have to do our due diligence. For instance, we have to reach out to the not-for-profit organizations, the faith-based organizations, and beyond. So I think like the normal practice of, hey, call this phone number or tap into this particular website, we have to go beyond that. And this is something that we really have to lean on the village. We have to ask each and every individual throughout the community to make a commitment to assure that the elders in the community, as well as the youth in the community, are taking advantage of these vaccinations, because this is how we fight back against this pandemic, by everyone being actively involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Conyers, let me ask you just for opening thoughts from you about the effort to vaccinate at this site and the intention of trying to reach underserved communities. What do you make of it, Dr. Conyers?
So I agree that I think this is a great start to have this site go in directly in the neighborhoods that are servicing the folks we want to get vaccinated and have been out of conversations for such a long time. I think it's also going to be important to continue to watch over the next week how many people are coming in, who are we not able to get to, and how we can make changes in that moment to make sure that we are reaching folks so that we can get the 1,000 a day for the week or the 2 weeks that is really going to be highlighting those zip codes before others begin to come in and take up spots.
Yeah, and let me extend, Dr. Conyers, that question that Assemblyman Meeks was just addressing, and I'd like to explore that with you. I will be blunt here. I think those early hours yesterday, I saw some sort of clumsy, accidental racism. And here's what I mean by that. There was this idea for several hours that, oh, well, see, people who live in those zip codes, they don't want the vaccine, or they're just not signing up. They don't care. As opposed to saying, who has internet access and who doesn't? Who has information and who doesn't? Who works during the day or overnight? Who is, sort of in position to get signed up and who is not? And what we saw is throughout the day, it started to pick up. And my guess is we're going to see a lot more concerted effort to reach and build awareness. But I thought there's something very precarious about just having a snap reaction to that. Again, especially if you live in a suburb and you think, well, I signed up. How come people in 14609 didn't? What do you think about that, Dr. Conyers?
Yeah, I agree. I will say that I even tried yesterday for a good hour twice to call to get my great aunt, who's in her 80s, a vaccination appointment and had not been able to. And my mother had to follow up later. And here I am navigating meetings and trying to work, et cetera. And she was able, my mother was able to get something for her aunt a little bit later in the day, but there were barriers faced. The frustration for my mother. I felt the frustration for me trying to get an appointment, but was being the phone calls, it kept going back to like the operator. So it was frustrating for me. And so I think others it would be frustrating for as well. You think about those who do not have maybe access to the internet, although you could call, you still have to be able to wait on hold, or at least yesterday you had to wait on hold for a period of time. And if you have something to do, it's going to be hard for you just to continue to pause your day and not follow up on those other things. So I am glad that other community organizations will be assisting. Again, the libraries was mentioned, and other community organizations to help making calls for people who just don't have the capability to.
Sure. And that cuts across racial boundaries. I mean, a lot of that is about we talk a lot about race, and we should. We talk a lot less about class and opportunity and socioeconomics. And I know that there's a lot of inequality. So I appreciate those points. Now, on the subject of who is more resistant to the vaccine, there's some very interesting surveys from the last week. And here is what the most recent data shows us. If you go back 3 months, if you go back 6 months, if you go back 9 months, there has been a steady decline in opposition to vaccines in different subgroups. So you can break it down by politics. You can break it down by race, age, gender, etc. There has been, just about every category, there has been an erosion in the firm opposition, the hard no's. There has been an erosion in the probable no's. There is, you know, still a significant number of American adults who are on the fence or don't know. And right now, we're not on pace as a country to get to herd immunity unless we get more adults across the spectrum signed up. The group that is the most firmly opposed, the hard no's that have moved the least, are white Republicans. It's interesting. There's a lot of focus, understandably so, on communities of color that had, I think, very justified hesitancy, Dr. Conyers, because of medical history, inequality, abuse. We have seen the survey numbers start to really move on that. What are you seeing when you talk to people who are expressing hesitancy, concerns for various reasons?
I think that I have seen in talking to various folks continuing at the doing the COVID testing that we've been doing, when people are coming for the COVID testing and we have a conversation with them about what is your plan for the vaccine, interestingly, many people are saying, I can't wait to get it. And so many of the people that I'm talking to are Black and brown folks in our community who are excited to get it. The barrier has been, again, getting an appointment. And this had been prior to the news of the new site coming. And so I think that, you know, when we look at the groups that are continuing to want the vaccine versus those who won't, who don't, yes, there is still hesitancy with some groups. But I think that as we are continuing to educate, as we are continuing to provide the data for folks and just have conversations around our tables at dinner in different community places, people who originally were saying no, we are saying yes, and they are wanting and saying, sign me up. And that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Assemblyman Meeks, what are you seeing?
Yeah, I think it's really based upon us like educating individuals on this matter, but also people views change when they can relate to a matter. And I've seen people that I know personally, and these are individuals who are known throughout the community that work at the University of Rochester at Strong. Many of them are members of 1199 SEIU, and they took their vaccinations round one and two, and some of them took the vaccination publicly. So they're sharing their stories on their social media platforms, and people are actually engaging and asking questions. So when you can talk to everyday people and see that, oh, wow, you know, such and such took it. They also shared that they had some pre-existing conditions and things seem to be going okay for them. You know, I think I'll take it. And I think when you have those real-life testimonies from everyday people, it tends to resonate and change your views as far as your outlooks on this vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to get more of those testimonies and engage everyday people.
Mm-hmm. Senator Cooney, what do you think?
Well, I agree with the assemblyman about the importance of personal testimonies. You know, this is Rochester. We're all interconnected, and we all have neighbors and friends and you know, people that we know have gone through this process. And when you see that validated, it does make it more comfortable and easier to get your head around that this is something that is just safe and necessary for herd immunity, but also just for our community. But I wanted to add a point as it relates to the signing up process, because one of the things that I received a lot of phone calls at our Senate office here in Rochester with challenges and difficulties either navigating the phone system or the online website. We know it's not as user-friendly as it should be. You know, obviously we can complain about it, but what are we going to do about it? And so, you know, whether you're calling a state elected official or a 311 representative or you're visiting your local library, there are people who are willing to help you walk through the process. And I actually had a personal conversation with the governor on Sunday where he was kind of rolling this Hawkeye process out. And one of the things that he shared with me, which I haven't really heard much in the public narrative, but I want to share it with your listeners today, is that if folks walk into the Hawkeye site, so again, corner of Avenue E in St. Paul, and do not have an appointment, but you are still able to walk in and make an appointment in person. So if you have a barrier to access for internet technology, or you're not able to reach someone on the phone, you can still go to the site and make an appointment. And it's one of those situations where, if, you know, think of it like a beauty salon, right? If you go, you need to get a haircut, and you show up, and hey, someone just canceled. Why don't you come in right now? If you're eligible and you meet the qualifications, then you might be able to get your first shot right then and there. And we know that one of the many advantages of having this site in the city of Rochester, you know, versus like the Dome Arena, for example, is that there are lots of neighborhoods that surround this site. So whether you're walking over from the Maplewood area, or whether you're coming from the northeast section of the city, you can have access to this vaccine site, unlike some of the other ones. So I want to emphasize that for any of the listeners who may be thinking about that as an option to get themselves their first vaccination.
Yeah, good information. Let me take a phone call from Liz in Rochester. Hi, Liz. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to tell you that's good information to know. But if you're like me, an elderly, hard to walk to that site, but it's good to know people can do it. I'm in a zip code that did qualify, and I called yesterday. I was on hold for about 25 minutes. Got a very nice young man, made my appointment for the Hawkeye site. I told him, yes, I had internet. I should have said no, because my neighbor next door, I called right away. I happen to be white. My neighbor next door is an older black gentleman, my buddy of many years. And he was able to call yesterday and get an appointment. He doesn't have internet, but they gave him the number right over the phone that he would need. For me, they sent me all this stuff. I had to take a picture of my chit that said I had the appointment. I had to fill out the health form, even though they had already done that. And then I had to go over to the library and get that printed because I don't have a Wi-Fi printer. So it got a little more complex for me. I think it would have been better if I just said, no, I don't have internet. But that had been one of my questions. Mm-hmm. What do people do in these zip codes that don't have Wi-Fi, don't have internet, do not have computers, or don't know 100% how to utilize them like me? So I think the biggest thing right now is education. I'm an old public health nurse. Things were not as bad in the city 30 years ago when I walked those streets of the quote-unquote inner city as they are now. We need to get the word out on the TVs, on WDKX, in the churches, that make it easy for people. Repeat the phone number. Tell them all you have to do is call. And then, however, they can get transportation, which is the second problem. Last week, I wouldn't have been able to walk into that site. And I already planned to take my rollator in the back of my car in case I needed to walk any distance. So even, you know, for me, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get an appointment at my pharmacy with no luck. And I wasn't terrified. You know, I'm stay home. I wear my mask and everything. If I didn't get it for another month, that's fine. But for a lot of folks, another friend of mine in the zip code, older black lady with diabetes, I call to help support the fact that this is safe and it's ultimately going to protect you. So that's all I got to say.
Liz, you're a good neighbor. And I'm really glad that you got this. And I hope it's because they feel good and better about things here. So.
Yeah, my neighbors on the other side got theirs, the two of them. They happen to be white, but I am in the 19th ward, and we are integrated by choice 50 years ago when my sister was on the housing committee and we got rid of redlining. So we do. It's a good neighborhood. And we do help each other. So and that's how we got to get the vaccines out, too.
Right.
We really got to support people person to person and say, this is safe, it's good for you, and we'll help you get it if you need the help, if you need the ride, whatever. So thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
What you do.
Yeah, thank you, Liz. So let me do, just at Liz's urgings, let me just go over a little information, then I'll ask all of our guests to weigh in on just making sure that we're going over the information so you all have it. Eligible zip codes for this site: 14605, 14613, 14611, 14608, 14621, 14619. I should be doing this in order. 14606, 14615, 14614, 14609, 14604, 14603. Now, the phone number, as Liz mentioned, I don't think 311 will get you an appointment. They'll probably have you hang up and call this one. So here it is, 1-833-NYS-4-VAX, 833-NYS, as in New York State, NYS, the number 4, VAX, V-A-X. Senator Cooney, anything you want to add to Liz's phone call?
Well, first, let me just say, Liz's comments is why I love Rochester so much. I mean, is that not the epitome of who we are?
Yeah, it's great stuff.
God bless her. So let's just try to be good neighbors, to a good reminder for all of us to be good neighbors and help people navigate this system. I'm glad you went over those zip codes. I would say, you know, feel free to reach out to your state legislator's office. Our number is 225-3650. We are a Rochester-based office. We've got 10 great constituent services liaisons ready to help you navigate the process. We can help you sign up as well. And obviously you've got the website, but you can also go to rocsenator.com and you can sign up right through our website as well. Again, we're all in this together. And so if you're having trouble with the technology, as Liz mentioned, some folks are, you know, having trouble accessing a steady broadband connection. We're going to talk about that, I think, in a little bit. But if you're having trouble, reach out, give us a call. I know you can call Assemblyman Meeks' office as well. We're all in this together.
Assemblyman Meeks, you want to add to that?
Yes. Yeah, so that number is 1-833-697-4829. Again, that's 1-833-697-4829. My office, 585-454-3670. And the website is covid19vaccine.health.ny.gov. So please reach out. Hopefully we can get it on the website there. I'm also sharing it on my my Facebook page and my social media outlets.
And before we let Dr. Conyers go, a couple questions for her. So because we're going to move on to some other state business in our second half hour with our guests. But Dr. Conyers, first of all, what do you make of Liz's phone call? And not only the spirit of that call, but the overall idea here that that there is, I think, a requirement of a rising tide lifting all boats in this pandemic, of understanding the value of helping people get appointments when they might be struggling, and the patience required to get that done, maybe in, especially in the coming days here at this site. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think, you know, from one public health nurse to another, I want to thank Liz for calling in. She realizes the, you know, we need to build connections. We need to stand together in these times and really come together. And so her story of just how she's helping folks is a prime example of that. We have to continue to do this. This is all about the community coming together, and I think in the end, it's definitely for the greater good, and we're going to see that as we see our numbers of those getting vaccinated rise and decrease COVID hospitalizations and death. So thank you, Liz, very much for all you are doing. An example.
On the subject of eligibility, too, just to kind of clarify, a listener just sent me a note on, you know, living in those numbers. Yes, you still need to be in Tier 1A or 1B, even if you live in those zip codes. Mm-hmm. It's not just for anybody in those zip codes. It's for people who are otherwise eligible and live in those zip codes. So for now, we haven't seen an expansion beyond Tier 1A and 1B. There you go. So I hope that helps. And I certainly hope we see slots fill up here. Dr. Conyers, one of the things that we've certainly been hearing in conversations with communities of color about not only vaccine access, but trusting a medical community is a desire to see more people who look like us in public health, in doctor's offices. I know that matters to you. How do we build a bigger pipeline to healthcare in communities of color?
I think building that bigger pipeline takes it happening at the younger ages. So who are we talking to in middle schools? Who are we talking to in high schools? And really trying to get the youth to recognize the importance of getting into healthcare professionals, really strengthen our pipelines, and having people who look like them is going to be what we need to ensure that we have representation in our healthcare workforce to look like the population that we serve. The population is asking for it. Our healthcare professionals are wanting it. And really, we need to start at younger ages and having conversations with kids and their family about the importance of having a career, a very positive lifelong career in healthcare. And we can really do some changes with that. I think us educating as groups, Black Physicians Network, Rochester Black Nurses Association, and them seeing us is also something that's going to make them say, yes, this is what I want to do. And let's mentor, let's support each other, let's help each other and encourage each other to get to those next steps.
Dr. Conyers, I imagine your schedule is very busy. I want to tell you that we are grateful for your time, and I hope we can convince you to come back soon, because this pandemic, unfortunately, doesn't end tomorrow or next week, and there's a lot of work to do, and I hope we can bring you back.
You're right about that. I'm happy to come back anytime. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Yvette Conyers, Doctor of Nursing Practice, Family Nurse Practitioner, and Assistant Professor of Nursing, bringing the experience and just some information that I think the whole community needs right now. We also have, for the rest of the hour, Damon Meeks, member of the New York State Assembly, Jeremy Cooney, member of the New York State Senate. And after this only break, we're going to close the loop on this site, answer any other remaining questions you have, and then we've got a lot more to talk about. Broadband, we're going to talk about their thoughts about, maybe a state responsibility in responding to the no bill and the no indictment on the Daniel Prude case and Rochester Police, and a lot more with them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, during a lesson on the Civil Rights Movement and Rosa Parks, a young Latino boy asks, "Where did we sit on the bus?" His teacher couldn't answer the question. That boy is now an adult, and he's performing a one-man show about his immigrant experience. It's streaming through Jiva Theater. We preview the performance with the storyteller. Then, in our second hour, a conversation about disability mentoring. Talk with you Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. All right, so just cleaning up some questions still regarding this Rochester site for COVID vaccination. Kim in Rochester. Go ahead, Kim.
Hello. I'm calling because I live in the 14613 zip code, and I'm 63 years old, and I don't have any health issues, and so I don't meet any of the criteria. However, when I'm hearing the conversation that the spots that are being held for our zip codes aren't being filled, I wonder if there's any way, or it would be helpful if maybe there could be a waiting list for people that meet the criteria of being in the zip code, but not another criteria. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I certainly do. And Kim, my understanding for the moment is there is not a plan to do that. But, you know, I'm not a policymaker, and I'm not sure the senator or the assemblyman would be able to pull those strings to make that policy. But it is I think it's an interesting suggestion because certainly the desire is to serve these underserved communities and to make sure that the doses get used. So let me thank you for the call, Kim. Let me ask Senator Cooney first. Do you know anything about that? I mean, I don't know that there is any sort of a waiting list for people who aren't currently eligible.
Yeah, I appreciate Kim's question, Evan. Yeah, there's not a formalized waiting list, but I can tell you what our office is doing. So, Kim, I don't know your exact address, but if you want to call my office here in Rochester, 225-3650, 225-3650, and if you're our constituent, we're happy to record your name and your phone number, and as we get information, we are reaching back out to specific constituent groups, and we're happy to add you to that list. Again, we're all in this together, so we're trying to navigate a very tough time. But I do not believe that there is a statewide next in line or wait list, if you will.
Okay, and so good luck to you, Kim. I mean, we don't know when they're going to open up on age or what the next step will be. It sounded like talking to Dr. Nana Bennett from the Vaccine Task Force, it'll be a little while because 1A and 1B is a pretty large number. We're talking 600,000 people in our several county area, and they vaccinated about a quarter of those. So it'll probably be a while, but I don't know for sure. And it's certainly something to keep checking on. So let me ask both of you and Damon Meeks, if we get to a point... Well, let's do two scenarios. We can't fill up all of the vaccine appointments that are available. Is that a disappointment? Or we end up filling them all up and, you know, there's questions about whether we should extend the window of making it exclusive to these zip codes. How do we navigate those scenarios in your mind, Mr. Assemblyman?
I think that, I mean, for one, a wait list would make sense to have a list for individuals who are interested, that are willing to go through the process and sign up, and then to be able to follow up. So that's something I took a note of and will inquire more about that. And I think, like I said, we're just going to have to do our due diligence to make sure that we're reaching everyone by any means necessary, regardless of what the barriers may be. We talk about broadband and, you know, some folks may have access, some may not, telephone calls. But, you know, one of the key things that the caller Liz spoke about was reaching out to her neighbors. And I think that's how we really combat this, like going beyond oneself. And even if it is based upon one's self-interest, right, it's in everyone's best interest to have your community vaccinated, your neighbors or what have you. So I think that it's definitely a need for a community effort, and that's how we get past this.
Okay. Senator Cooney, what do you see as sort of the set of options for this site going forward, given the fact that you have the mayor saying extend this window, keep it exclusive for longer, but you also, you know, we're hearing even on social media from listeners who are saying, hey, I called and there's all kinds of appointments right now, you know, let's keep working to get people in there because they're not filling up yet. What do you think?
Well, I think we need to do two things. One, we need to acknowledge that there is definitely a discrepancy already happening right here in Monroe County. If you read the paper, the front page of the paper this morning, there's an article that talks about one part of my district, the 56th Senate District, which is Brighton, has over 20% of its population having been vaccinated. Other parts of my district in the city of Rochester have less than 10%, right? So that's a problem. So what are we going to do about it? We have to be intentional about making sure people have access. I think location is really important. That's why I'm glad that this new site is located in a neighborhood setting within the city of Rochester. I think making sure that we are all rowing the same direction in terms of how we're getting information out to people. Because even if folks don't sign up for this, let's say the first week, but they sign up the second week, that's a good thing too, right? And we just keep on pressing forward to making sure that everyone has access and knows that they have the right to get their vaccine, and that their friends and neighbors and loved ones are also getting the vaccine. As Senator Meeks talked about before, those testimonies are really important. So if you've had the vaccine, or you're maybe you're going to get one soon, please talk about it. Be open about it. Don't feel. I'm seeing some conversations about people feeling guilty getting the shot. Mm-hmm. That's silly. You know, everyone should feel proud to be in a country, to be in a community where they have access to high-quality health care. We know this vaccine will save lives. We can't afford to lose yet another. So tell, you know, be loud and proud, right? Tell your neighbors, if you've already gotten your shot and you feel comfortable, drive your neighbors like Liz is doing to a vaccination site, because that's how we're going to be in a better place in hopefully a few months.
All right, so what about broadband? What about making sure that right now we know that there is an inequality in access, but making sure that in the future, I hate to say the next pandemic, nobody even wants to think that way, but the next crisis, that there will be a little bit more equity here, that there's more opportunity to have access and be connected to what is essentially becoming a public utility. So, Senator Cooney, I'll start with you. What is out there to address broadband at the state level?
Well, first of all, let's acknowledge that the digital divide is very real. We're seeing it manifest itself right now with trying to get vaccine appointments. But we also saw this past several months as our students have really struggled to connect to classrooms. We know that 20% of the city of Rochester households don't have internet access. They don't have broadband access. And so, yes, there were some, you know, MiFi devices that you can check out of the library or schools. The Rochester State School District gave those to students. But we're just putting Band-Aids on a problem because, as you acknowledged, Evan, you know, internet access is not just a luxury. It's not just to check email. It's how we apply for jobs. It's how we participate in the workforce. It's how we learn if it's our online classroom. So, you know, I'm proud to you know, have sponsored legislation in the New York State Senate. There's a bill that my friend and colleague, Senator Shelley Mayer, who is the chair of the Education Committee in the Senate, has called the eLearn Bill, which ensures that all children across the state of New York will have access to technology through high-quality broadband internet connectivity, puts resources behind it. We know that a lot of times, you know, there's good intentions, but there's not the resources behind it to actually do the hardware side of fiber connections. And so this is a step in the right direction. Because again, you know, I hope there's, you know, God willing, there's not a future pandemic. But if we don't learn from where we are right now, and the struggles that we have been enduring over the past year, then we're not going to leave this state and our community a better place for the next generation.
Assemblyman Meeks, go ahead.
Evan, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said a public utility. And that's how we must treat broadband, as a public utility, and assure that every household has access to it. It has so many effects on social outcomes when you're talking about healthcare. You know, you can go to the doctor via video. So those who don't have transportation or the ability to make it to a doctor's office, if they had access to quality broadband. And I often mention quality broadband because, like, we can't just go with, like, you know, 15 or 25. Like, we have to get up to 100 MG plus. So I think that's necessary. And also education. When we look at the educational divide that has taken place throughout this pandemic, part of that is due to a lack of access to the internet and to broadband. So I think we have to recognize it as a public utility and ensure that all households have access sooner than later.
Moving on to some other issues, Assemblyman Meeks, the Attorney General of New York State, Letitia James, said that her office presented the best case and the strongest case it could regarding the death of Daniel Prude and the possible charges against Rochester police officers, but a grand jury ultimately decided that those officers would not be charged. Take me through your reaction to that and what you think is an appropriate next step here.
Well, I can tell you, I definitely emotional, you know, just feeling like a sense of a trauma, the trauma from initially watching this video and seeing a video pop up on my news feed from time to time, and then to see the outcomes from this grand jury. I'm disgusted by this predictable result. If you would have asked me, what do you think the outcomes were going to be, I would have said exactly what took place. Verdicts like these, they tend to endorse police brutality and unchecked racial and implicit bias housed within police departments throughout the country. We've seen this time and time again here in Rochester. We haven't just begun to have issues with police officers shooting and or hurting unarmed individuals. and a number of these individuals were dealing with matters of mental health. We saw this back in 2005 when a young lady was shot by an officer several times. And the phone call was, hey, we have a young lady who's 13 years old threatening to cause herself bodily harm with a knife. So officer arrives and decides, okay, she ends up shot three times, opposed to, you know, someone that can actually meet her where she was and talk her through the situation and give her the assistance that she needed. And I think it also goes back to training. Yeah, we know we have some individuals who are on that force that are blatantly racist, but then we also have a lack of quality training. And what we find nationally, as well as here in the Rochester community, police departments spend about 110 hours on gun training and about 8 hours on de-escalation. That's a problem, because if you're spending 110 hours on a particular thing, your brain is likely to go to that than something that you spent 8 hours on. So I think we have a lot of work to do as a community and as a state, you know, personally looking at different legislation that we can implement to change these practices, because if no one is held accountable, this continues to happen. And this has been happening for generations on. And I refuse to be in a position such as a state assembly member, and then for 20, 30 years from now, my children are dealing with the same type of ills in this society. So it must stop, and I'm committed to stopping it.
Senator Cooney.
I'm absolutely heartbroken. I mean, how could you not be? I mean, as Damon shared, you, that video pops up. And if you watch that video, and you know what? It's not just us watching that video. It's the nations, the world watching that video. How can you see those actions take place and come to the conclusion that was reached? I mean, clearly our criminal justice system continues to fail to protect the black and brown citizens of this state. And how many times do we have to see this type of action take place, to see these videos pop up on our devices before we realize that the system is not set up to hold officers accountable? You know, we have to look at this from a human lens, right? If we're training people, you know, whether it's implicit bias training, which obviously we need to have more of, I agree with Assemblyman Meeks. But if we're training officers that they're going to be immune from having any sort of consequences for their actions, then there's not going to be that human moment where we pause and reflect on our actions before proceeding. And so one of the things that I'm really interested in focusing on is talking about qualified immunity. And that's a state level policy decision that I, you know, I as a state senator and the rest of our state delegation has, I think, an opportunity to really get into. I mean, I'm co-sponsoring a bill right now in the Senate that would allow victims and loved ones to be entitled to a day in court. So that if in the situation as we have with Mr. Prude, if a grand jury fails to make an indictment and to hold police officers criminally liable, that there would be a civil remedy for the family or the victim to make their case, to be heard, at the very least be heard. They still have to go through a process. But listen, nothing is going to bring Daniel Prude back. But, you know, this would have been an opportunity to give his family some sense of closure and a sense of justice, which we so desperately need in this community and in this state. I also want to highlight Daniel's Law. I know we've talked a lot about this as a community. This is a piece of legislation that my colleagues, Assemblyman Harry Bronson and Senator Samra Brook, have done some great leadership on in kind of refocusing our response. So that it's not necessarily armed police officers that are the first line of response, but really recognizing that when individuals who are having mental health crises should be seen by those professionals who can address and de-escalate those situations. So these are part of the kind of the comprehensive suite of state legislation that we have not just an opportunity to enact, but really a responsibility to move forward, because I agree with my colleague here that, you know, we've been given the great privilege to serve our community, but we're not doing our community any good if we're not listening to what the community has been crying out for, not just of recent, you know, events, but for decades. And it's time for us to step up and have that political courage to do what's right.
I want to ask both of you about Governor Andrew Cuomo. On this program last week, member of the Assembly Jen Lunsford told us that that the governor has lost some of the trust of his party, that she thinks that some of the state actions regarding not being transparent about the number of deaths in nursing homes has been unacceptable. And she is open to at least a process of trying to understand more about this. She's not simply saying out of hand, no, let's move on. Now, that came before one of the governor's former staff members alleged yesterday in detail that the governor sexually harassed her and kissed her against her wishes. The governor's office has vigorously denied this. But now you've got member of the Assembly Harry Bronson put out a statement saying that there will at least be an investigation and an understanding and a hearing to determine what happened here. Senator Cooney, so two questions, and they're related here. Those allegations of sexual harassment, will they be vetted? Should they be vetted? And has the governor lost the trust of his party?
Well, the trust is the key word here, Evan. There has been definitely an erosion of public trust. You know, we took office on January 1st, and our phone has been ringing off the hook with folks who have loved ones in nursing homes right here in Rochester who have been trying to just get basic information and are worried about their ability to be the best advocate for their loved one, especially as we, you know, navigate through this pandemic. And, you know, the legislature has not only, again, the opportunity, but also the responsibility to be a co-equal branch of government, meaning that there should be a free flow of information that allows us to be the best advocates for our constituents. And so what we have seen is an erosion of that trust. And let's not forget that we are still in a public health crisis. We are still in the middle of the pandemic. So it is critical that we start to repair that. You know, I don't want to get into the political blame game of you know, who's doing this and who said what as it relates to the nursing homes. You know, but I do think that the nursing home issue should be addressed. There should be an accountability conversation. And there should also be a new mechanism to ensure that information is more transparent so that we start to rebuild that trust. Now, let me comment quickly on the sexual harassment side of stories. You know, I've been reading, you know, just like everyone else has about this, and of course, I'm deeply troubled and concerned. Here's how I look at it, and it's pretty simple to me. Anyone who brings forth any sort of claim or story such as has been brought up should be heard and be taken seriously. Accusations must be taken incredibly seriously. And I don't care if you're accusing the governor of the state of New York or if you're accusing someone else. Every person needs to be heard. We need to take it seriously. It's very upsetting. And we're never going to break this pattern if we don't start believing people and we don't start giving them the opportunity to make their case. And so I would agree that we need to have an opportunity for that woman to be heard, that former employee to be heard and to be taken seriously, and for us to make sure that we have the policies in place so that every state employee has the similar opportunities to feel that they are working in an environment that respects who they are and that they are able to do their job diligently, especially as a public servant for this state.
Assemblyman Meeks.
Yeah, so as it relates to the harassment, I definitely share similar sentiments as Jeremy. And as it relates to the trust with the governor, I think this has definitely been a challenge, and there's a need for transparency on a number of issues, in particular with what we're dealing with the nursing homes. I will say, like, I've been asked a question, like, about the potential impeachment or what have you of the governor. And me personally, I just feel like it seemed like so many different distractions that are taking us off our game as it relates to what we need to do for so many New Yorkers. For one, we need to raise revenue. I'm in full support of IONI investing our New York legislation bills to assure that we have the resources for a number of programs that are currently on a chopping block. And then we also have to focus on vaccinations throughout our communities, and insecurities such as housing insecurity as well as food insecurity. So as far as like an impeachment process, I mean, that's not something that I'm focusing my energy on. I'm focusing my energy on the constituents that put me here. And we have to make sure that we're, as a legislature, we're doing what's in the best interest of our constituents. And I think in doing so, affecting people's lives in real time, I think those are the type of things that our constituents can appreciate. And, you know, I also heard word of potential federal investigation. If the feds decide to come down with an investigation on the governor, so be it. But I think in the meantime, we have a state to take care of, and we have to do our due diligence in doing so.
I'm like literally 20 seconds, so I hate to do this, a yes-no thing. But last hour, we talked New York Health Act and single payer. Assemblyman Meeks, will you support single payer health care this year in New York State?
Yes.
Senator Cooney?
The New York Health Act is something I have supported in the past. We have not seen the newest version of it, but I will certainly read that bill, and I am definitely open to having a conversation to make sure more people have access to health care.
I'm grateful for your time, and I think it's a tremendous service to listeners who are your constituents, not only regarding the pandemic, but other issues. Assemblyman DeMond Meeks, thank you for that time. I always appreciate it and look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you.
Senator Jeremy Cooney, thank you, sir. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, Evan.
Important conversation this hour. Listeners, once again, if you need a vaccine appointment and you live in one of those Rochester eligible zip codes, 833-NYS-4VAX. Rob Braden, Megan Mack, Evan Dawson saying have a great afternoon, and we will talk to you Friday.